there's two or three times that I've really been the very best in the world, stood on the stage with Stevie Wonder, wonderful people. And I look back and say, how did I get there? And I got there by doing what I would advise you to do as you go through a difficult time, is to be your true self, not who you think other people want you to be, not what the other people want you to be, but who you truly are. And that is how you truly shine. So I encourage you to look into that and find what that is and stick to it. Thank you.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
All right, welcome to the Professor of Perseverance Podcast. I'm Dr. James Perdue. Hey, the Professor of Perseverance himself. Glad to be here. Boy, it's a sunny day outside. Had a little strange thing happen today. Went to go walk my dog. And when I came back, there's police out there in my neighborhood, cul-de-sac, my neighbors are talking, and found out someone just walked in my house today and walked out with a duffel bag, nothing in it, just my duffel bag that I travel with. Well, who knows what's going on today. All I hope is, one, I hope to catch him and get him some help. And also, if he needs the bag to whatever, because he seemed a little homeless. So hopefully he can get some good use out of the bag, you know, more than I did at the time. Hey, today our topic, our guest is going to be one that I've never experienced or talked about before. So it's going to be a new one for me to learn from as well. So today, Robert is a native of Rwanda, where him and his family lived through the 1994 Rwanda genocide. Oh, wow. Here we go now. They spent 6 years in a refugees camp. When he was 11, they resettled here in Memphis, Tennessee, just a couple hours from where I live. And he went to Stanford, graduated, and he came up with his own alternative to credit rating, come up with his own agency, Credit Marks. So let's get our guest on today, Rob Cabrera. Thank you for being here today.
Happy to be here with the Professor of Perseverance himself. It's a pleasure.
So, buddy, thank you. So we'll hopefully learn from each other a little bit today, huh?
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Definitely want to learn about this genocide and stuff. You know, we don't hear about that much of something like in my area, you know, here in the U.S., but in other countries, man, this stuff, it takes place. And I don't understand things like that because they've never experienced it. And so, hopefully you enlighten us on what happened and how y'all did. And of course, obviously you did great getting through it. Your family taking care of you for you to go to Stanford and then start your own company. So you've done something right. Somebody's helped you do it right.
Absolutely. I mean, in short, all credit goes to my parents, but I just listen to them.
There you go. That's right. So I like these people when they call themselves, I'm a self-made millionaire. Did it all by myself. I go, really? I said, there's one problem with that. You may have learned by yourself. You may have taught by yourself. You may have spoke by yourself. But if other people didn't follow you and buy your property, your stuff, didn't buy it, you're nothing. So don't give me you're a self-made. People had to help you out to get there.
Absolutely.
So, all right, Rob. Hey, all right, let's go ahead. You said 11 years old when you came to Tennessee. So 6 years in a refugee camp. So go ahead and explain to us about the 1994 Rwanda genocide that was going on during that time.
Absolutely. And I would like to spend a good 20 seconds on why I love your podcast and why this is an important topic. It's come to my attention that people that are going through difficult times, whether it's being an immigrant from Africa or Mexico or having health issues, we are often labeled as crisis and seen as public problems. But that is far from the case. We are people who are the best of humanity because we go through hardships and we're still alive and we're still making it. And because of that, we should be able to draw power and inspiration from that, because we're going through things that other people do not go through. So I shared my story of coming literally from living in a tunnel for 21 days in the middle of a genocide, to spending 6 years without a formal education, to graduating as a valedictorian, to graduating as an award-winning engineer at Stanford, to making it to Forbes list, and all because of why? I was a so-called crisis simply because I went through difficult times. Those difficult times inspired me, gave me a fierce sense of determination. And the point of this conversation, I hope, is you know that you can also draw from your difficulties and turn them into weapons of success.
When you have learned that you've gone to battle with the evil, adversity, difficulty, struggle, challenge, and then you came out on the other side of it, you've got to feel good about yourself, and you ought to use that experience to help other people.
Absolutely.
In the long run.
Absolutely.
So, all right, yes. Let's go
back,
and get
back,
into
back to the
story.
Rwanda situation.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So Rwanda is a small country in East Africa. If you've ever known Professor Jane Goodall, she was a researcher that dealt with gorillas.
Yes,
there's a famous documentary called Gorillas in the Mist. So when we were younger, grandma would tell us of a crazy white woman playing with monkeys in the village. We thought grandma was high or something.
It turns out
the gorillas actually from my parents' village. So the Silverbacks, that's where I'm from. It's a small country, very hilly, very lush. And like other African countries, we were colonized by the Belgians. And they sort of divided the country into two classes of people. And the genocide was basically about those two sides, the Hutu and the Tutsi, fighting. Long story short, in a period of about 100 days, over 800,000 people were killed.
Wow.
And so that was sort of the genocide. And I'll spend a good like 30 seconds on my particular family story in it. You know, I was 5.5 years old, living in the suburbs. It's a Wednesday evening, April 6, 1994. We are home having dinner. We hear 3 loud blasts in the distance. And suddenly, there's gunfire, literally gunfire of nowhere. And the next morning, we hear that the president's plane had been shut down and everything was on lockdown. So all these militias are running on the streets with their clubs, making noise, looking to kill people. And we had some family friends of ours that, well, the opposite tribe. So we brought them home for hiding. And my dad had dug a tunnel in the back of our house to keep his equipment. And so when the shooting and killing started in our house, we got a bag of beans, rice, some sugar, and went underground. There were 17 of us living in the tunnel. The youngest was a 3-week-old baby. There was a woman who was pregnant. And we were in there for 22 days. Whereby we ate the raw food to survive, and we basically were in there until the fighting had ended from our part of the neighborhood, and we came out. And by the time we came out of the tunnel, you know, it was full of dead people. Dogs were used to eating dead people. They were now chasing live people. It was just a desolate place. And the militia in the neighborhood told us, you know, we had to leave that area and go somewhere else. And at the age of 6 years old, I remember walking a distance of like 75 miles by myself in the middle of dead bodies to come from the city to the refugee center. So that's a quick overview of the genocide and why it happened and sort of the things we had to go through during that event.
That's amazing that, especially at a young age that you're talking about, that your mind just didn't get infested and corrupted, you know, with the looking at all the dead bodies, knowing that war was going on. And here you are, you know, trying to hide and survive from this. It's amazing that your mind just didn't go out and leave you somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Right. And, you know, my dad always jokes. He says, I was more of a man at the age of 6 than I am now at 32.
There you go, that's right.
Sort of a joke, but you know, part of what I look back remembering is, look, I remember walking on the roadside and seeing people my age, kids my age, fussing and making noise and crying, and I can see the distress in their parents' family. I said, look, I don't want to be like that person over there. I just got to keep moving one foot in front of the other, right? So I think similar in life, no matter how young you are, you have a choice. Keep one foot in front of the other. If a six-year-old can do it, so can you. But at the same time, if you don't actually put forth the effort, then nothing is guaranteed. But what I'm saying is, if you can just keep getting one foot in front of the other, you can walk those 75 miles, whatever those 75 miles are for you.
Yeah, it's amazing how resilient we are, especially children. You know, for you to have the mindset, like you said, I'm not going to put the extra stress on my family, and having to grow up fast. You know, I have to tell people, my father died when I was 16. So I had to grow up fast at a 16-year-old. You know, not, it's hard to imagine at your age, you know, having to grow up so fast, for you to be mature enough to go, I'm not going to put the extra stress on my parents. So, yeah, it's just remarkable. And then it goes back to your upbringing, too. You know, mom and dad, they taught you, you know, to roll with the punches, to get ready for the good stuff, get ready for the what's ahead of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whatever I've achieved in life, I think the credit goes to my parents. Because if you look at the first 12 years of my life, it was very unstructured. No formal education, no childhood in the sense of recess, having neighbors. But they were there. They loved me. They gave me the guidance I needed. All I had to do was listen to them, and it turned out fantastic.
Yeah, I've said before that, especially my dad, I said he loved me, boy, when I needed it, but he also busted my butt when I needed it. So he was there to help me stay in line. So and I veered off quite a bit, and he put me right back in line quick as he could. So
absolutely.
So, all right, now, a lot of us, you know, we go through stuff, you know, challenges. A lot of small things that seem to irritate. Sometimes it irritates us more than the huge things. I guess because we know the huge thing is real serious. Okay, so what would you say about when going through a traumatic experience and everything? How to overcome these obstacles?
Yes, absolutely. So, traumatic experiences vary, right? For me, it was a genocide. For some people, it's accidents, it's abusive parents, it's war, right? A lot of soldiers suffer through PTSD. It is something that completely shocks you and changes your view of the world. That is the definition of a traumatic experience. Now, how do you overcome it? I spent a long time understanding and trying to define it. And there's a framework I have used and that actually works. And the first step to it is to be able to get perspective of what's going on. And one of the best ways to get perspective is to be able to put a narrative to what happened to you. If you can put it in words and talk about it, you remove yourself and see it. And when you see it, it's like you're stuck in mud. But if you're stuck in the mud, you can't really see what's the best way to get out. But if you step up, you can see where to get out. So that narrative gives you the perspective. Once you have the perspective, whoever you are, you have certain building blocks that helped you see the world before you went through the experience. It may have been family. It may have been friends, a loved one. For some people, it's religion, right? Faith. So when you are going through, have passed through that traumatic experience, you have a narrative. You find what are your building blocks. For me, obviously, it was my family and also my faith. And you get back to them and you use them. And as long as you are consistent with those things that helped your worldview and you pick them up again, you are able to sail through whatever thing that comes your way. What keeps us down is when we go through an experience and we wallow, we have no perspective. We're just stuck in it. And to overcome it, we have no building blocks to build that reality again. But whoever you are, you have them, look back to them, use them, build them. And this has actually been scientifically proven, because I did a study with a person who used to be the head of the American Psychiatry Association at Stanford University, Stanford Medical School. And this is a system that is used to be able to help people that have gone through traumatic experiences to overcome them.
And USA live stream, hey, thank you for coming in today, buddy. He's saying hello to you, Rob.
So, hello, USA live stream. Glad to have you with us.
Yes, sir. And he's already said amen to you, to so many true 1,000,000%. So
I appreciate it.
So he's in on, and I'm like, I like you. Part of your building blocks is you need what I call, you talking friends, family, and everything. I just call it a great supporting system. So, right. And again, it's friends, family, and it's not just limited to that. What about the education that you can get from it, from this? You know, find someone that's been through what you're going through and get their advice how they got through it. And find someone else that's going through it now or been through it before. And so, you know, I call it a supporting system to go from there. And I like the other part you said, have that narrative, you know, and step back, and that way you can kind of jump out of it for a second and then read or understand what's really happening here. And then you can dive back into it.
Yes. Yes. And oftentimes it is going through difficult and sorrowful experiences that we find the most meaning and purpose in life. My profession now is software around the grid, but I found what I call, quote unquote, my true calling when I was 10 years old, living in a refugee camp in Botswana. I was trying to read a science book at night on a kerosene lamp, and the wind keeps blowing the lamp out, and I'm frustrated by it because if I don't do well in school, my self-esteem goes down. And I looked up in the sky, saw a plane going across the sky, and I said, ask myself two questions. One, how can that airplane have its lights on, and how can we get that light down here? And second, how can we keep the light on? For the last 22 years, that problem that I faced in refugee camp has driven me to where I've done very well in my profession. I have a software system that can predict how the grid, the entire grid of entire city will behave in the instance of a storm. So oftentimes when you are going through a difficult experience, it's when you sort of have that focus, that drive to really find that thing that bothers you that you can commit yourself to and be able to really excel and contribute to advancing humanity in a large way.
I never got it into the technical aspect like you're talking. Yeah. So, you know, we just talk about find something to keep us motivated, inspired, you know, to keep going and whatever it may be. So,
yeah.
Now let's say we figured out what this challenge is, this obstacle, this traumatic experience, and now we've busted. We wore it out. We're moving ahead. We won this challenge. Now, what's to keep us from falling back? You know, to back into the whole hole, back into the why me or anything. You know, what keeps us to go keep going forward? What do you think?
Absolutely right. If there's a word they use in the English language, and I love languages. English is my seventh language. Work-life balancing. Balancing. The important thing is the ing. You never get there. You gotta keep it going. So like anything else in life, if you don't keep working, you sort of regress to where you came from. And once you've bust through whatever your demon is, your challenge, your seemingly insurmountable odds at a time, a way I found to sort of stay on top is to ask yourself two simple things. To try and understand what is your gift in life. We all have gifts. We're created unique. And your gift is simply that thing that you do very well, better than anybody else. And to do it for you is effortless, right? It's the old saying, something that nobody can pay you enough money to do or not to do. That is what your gift is. And once you've discovered that thing, then the purpose of life is to live your life giving that gift away. And I've discovered if you can match those two variables, you operate at a very highly efficient, highly functional zone that you always stay at the very best of who you can be. Now, you're going to deal with daily challenges, but your energy level, your drive, your motivation is going to be maximized because guess what? You are living out your purpose in life.
And like the last part where you said, when you use that purpose now to help others, that you're trying to give it away now. And usually we all have multiple gifts. You know, we may not be great in everything we do, but we're good enough that we can still help other people in certain areas as well. So don't think you just limit it to one. Yeah. But we may have one major one that we're awesome in, where we're just great in four others. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we're still have multiple. Now, I like this one word you use. I haven't used it a lot, and I may steal it from you now and my stuff, but I always talk about challenges, struggling, difficulties, overcoming adversities. But then you use this one word. I've used it before, especially my brother, that demons, it's not just a spinal cord injury or genocide or cancer. It's living for this demon. And that's when I look at people that are addicted to something. And so they're trying to keep that demon alive. My younger brother, he died from alcohol abuse.
Wow.
When he passed away, I told my mom and others, now he won't have to chase that demon anymore. And so, I've used that before, but I forgot about that until you mentioned it.
Yeah, no, thank you for that experience of your brother. And that's what it is. You struggle with it daily. We all have our struggles, but the key is to put up a fight, and we can succeed, and we do succeed. I mean, people like you are a living testament to the fact that you can succeed day in, day out.
Well, people like me, there's a bunch of people like me. They have some type of spinal cord injury. But I would say there's a bunch of people like you living through your genocide as well, okay? But it just seems just like it's so rare. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And because, I guess because, again, it's just not happening here. We don't know a lot about it because we think that's on the other side of the world. It's not affecting me. People don't think about it, And then people come over and share their experience, and it wakes people up. And I'm a firm believer everybody in the United States ought to leave this country once to go spend 2 weeks in a rural area so they'll know how thankful and blessed we really are, instead of whining and grinding about, we got it so good over here, but yet they want to whine and cry still.
Yeah.
Go live somewhere in a third world and then come back and whine and cry. So
yeah.
I actually have been over in the East Coast of Africa.
Okay.
And you know other people I have to explain where it's at, but you would know I've been over in the Comora Islands.
Okay.
So yes. I tell people the East Coast of Africa, and then out there's the Madagascar,
right.
And the Comora Islands are in between.
Right.
Four islands. And I got to go on to be on two of those islands.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the islands, it was called Anjouan, and the Great Comora was the other one.
Okay.
One of them, it was paradise. Mm. Nice breeze coming, beautiful blue waters, white sandy beach. It was awesome. Then we had to go over to Anjouan, the other one, and boy, you thought it was a war zone.
The
electricity is being cut off at 7 in the morning. It comes on at 7 in the morning. Then they turned electricity off in the country again about 1 in the afternoon, and it don't come back on until about 5 o'clock. And then it stays on to about midnight, and then it's turned off again to the overnight.
That's what they call load shedding.
Is it? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the purpose they said is that we found out was that people couldn't afford to pay their bills with all the electricity, so they have to spare it out so everybody gets some of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they couldn't afford to run it 24 hours a day because no one had money to pay the bills. But so the first experience, I mean, it was beautiful. Mm. That's not the experience I want people to go to. I wanted to be on that Anjouan.
Yeah.
where people are still living the best they can with electricity half the day, basically. And, you know, trying to keep the refrigerator cold enough to keep whatever food you got to, air conditioning whenever it got too hot, and then fanning themselves. I'm a firm believer people need to step out, go check out the other place, and then come back and be very thankful for what we do have.
Yeah, and to your point, right, it gives you perspective. And that perspective, you realize there are people whose lives from the day they're born to the day they die are full of difficulty. Like you mentioned, people are spending 12 hours a day without electricity. This is a very hot environment, 100 degrees outside Fahrenheit. There is dust everywhere. The roads are bumpy. The politicians are corrupt. Yet these people are extremely hospitable and extremely happy. So you learn the fundamentals. You learn to prioritize what matters, which is family and friends and more important things. And you learn that all these other things, a fancy car, a nice house, sure, those are nice, but, you know, you learn to be happy with little, which ultimately leads to, I think, a much happier life, which is why a lot of these people in these poor, difficult places are typically happy.
They are. I met one gentleman, and he was, I don't know if he was born with or he contracted polio early in his life, and he walked around with long leg braces and crutches or used a wheelchair. But these people were as happy as can be. And I'm glad that I wasn't just sent to be on the paradise because then I wouldn't have known the difference. You know, I'm glad I got to go to the other island, which was much poorer.
Yeah.
And so I could learn more and again, feel how grateful I am. You know, here I'm in a wheelchair complaining that these ramps over here, they're not wheelchair accessible. I can't push them. They're not going up the right angle at 1 degrees and for how many feet out, 1 inch up or whatever. It's none of the, you know, over there, you're lucky to have a ramp.
Exactly. You know?
And so, so it made me come back with a different perspective as well. So
I'm glad to hear it.
Now, explain to us going through, and how long was this tunnel that y'all were in, and how big was it, basically? Y'all were able to stand up pretty comfortably. Of course, being a young child, you probably could, but did adults have to bend down and walk? About how long was it cold, hot?
Absolutely. So Rwanda is on the equator, so the tunnel itself was sort of average temperature, and this was the summertime, so it was on the hot side of things. The tunnel was about, I want to say, 6 meters in, which you have to forget. I don't know what it is in feet, unfortunately.
Yeah, I tried to compare to make it easier.
Yeah.
When you say one meter stick is a little bit bigger than a yard stick in America. It's not much difference. So three feet is 1 yard stick, which is roughly 1 meter stick. So you're talking six, though, it's about 12 feet.
Absolutely. Yeah. About 12 feet. Yes.
Right. That's a rough guess.
Yes. That's a rough estimate. And how long? It was sort of an L shape. So it went in and then it went across. And the L shape was about the size of the length of two beds back to back, right? So it's 17 people in there. And we'd mostly, you know, no light, nothing. We had water. We'd soak the rice for a couple of hours and sprinkle a bit of sugar in there for energy and eat 2 teaspoons a day. We had very little. The water we had was only used for drinking. And eventually we ran out of the rice and the sugar and only had to drink water. And that was very difficult. But the way we sort of got through that experience was a lot of the people in the tunnel were very religious. And so we'd give each other encouraging scriptures and encouraging stories, right? Not so much. It was less. A lot of survivor stories you hear are individualistic, but actually your chances of survival are much better if you stick together as a group. and you say good things, you encourage one another. And I mean, it was hard, but you know, we got through it all right.
Yeah, a lot of the sports teams, you know, you got to win as a team, not individually. You veer off in a team setting, you may not do as well. So
yeah, and you know, the narrative of resilience and perseverance is often one of the personality, and I want to emphasize that the group dynamic is far stronger, far better, whether you are going through the experience as a group or it's the support system you have to help you go through the group. I think that is a much better situation to go through something difficult than to go through it alone. I think a lot of people have this perception, I'm solitary, I'm solo, I'm going to go through this alone and come back better. But having gone through a very difficult set of 3 weeks, it was much better because we were there as a group of people supporting each other and encouraging one another.
And I keep referring back to everything athletically because I played sports. Okay. Even your people that play golf individually, an individual swimmer, individual tennis player, individual bowler, I don't care. You have a supporting staff to help you. You have your coach. You have your strength coach. You have your conditioning coach. You have your coach that watch your swing to help to make it better. And nowadays, they all have their sports psychologists to keep their mindset right. And
absolutely.
So even though they're doing it by themselves competing, they had that supporting cast to help them go. So, hey, Rose, thank you. Yes, it has been a long time. Glad to see you're here as well. And thank you, Rose. She says she likes the topic. So this is Rob. I want you to meet Rob. And he's sharing his story with the genocide in Rwanda in 1994 and coming here.
Welcome to the show. Nice to meet you.
So, all right. Now, again, we stepped on the topic about trying to focus and stay ahead of the game and not reverting back. But that takes a lot of resiliency, doesn't it? I mean, how did you build your resiliency, and then how do you maintain it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the resiliency is from taking time to look at who you are as an individual. And as I mentioned earlier, what your gifts are. You can do everything. I mean, coming here to the US as an 11-year-old, hardly speak English, don't have the nicest clothes. You know, people make fun of you, but I discovered early on that, yeah, they're cool and all that, but if it comes to science and sociology and math, I'm quite good at it. So, you know, my focus was, let me find these things I'm good at and let me make them better. I think that to take time, self-aware, I guess if I could summarize it in two words, self-aware, mm-hmm. Yeah. Take time, reflect, be self-aware, and build on those strengths. And spend time building on those strengths and look for opportunities to share those strengths with other people. And that positive energy you get either by helping someone else or the fulfillment you get from helping other people is what's going to reinforce you to propel you forward. There's a good reason the good book says it's better to give than to receive, right?
Now, I have a little argument on that one, okay?
Okay.
But it's my what do you want to call it? My, not interpretation, but it's my, I don't know, way of viewing things, my way of goofing things around, goof things up, I guess. So I, good book does say it's better to give than receive, right? Okay. So that means if I'm giving, you've got to be a receiver. But if I'm giving, I'm not receiving. You know what I'm saying? I think it's got to be a two-way street.
Absolutely.
You've got to be able to give to help other people, but they've got to be humble enough to receive and take.
Absolutely.
Now, hopefully one day they're going to be able to give to someone to help them. Hopefully,
yeah.
You know, as well as I do, there's plenty of people that are give me, you know, so we're not talking about them. They're outside in their own thing.
Yeah.
So, But it's got to be a two-way street, because I can't give to you if you don't receive.
Absolutely.
And if no one's receiving, no one's giving then. So it's got to be that the humble to give and humility to receive.
Absolutely. And the other thing you will realize, as human beings, of course, we make mistakes. And sometimes you will make the wrong judgment in trying to overcome something, solve something. And oftentimes that's labeled failure. But the way I talk about it in my book is that good judgment comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment. So, feel free to be kind to yourself if you make a mistake or two when trying to overcome something. Because, hey, guess what? You have that experience, and hopefully you have better judgment next time.
And you just walked into me to promote my book and my mini course. So both of them just came out 2 weeks ago. The book and the mini course title, Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, But You Do. Create Your Future Today. So you go to my website, professorofperseverance.com, and you can go ahead and sign up for the free mini course. And while you're in there, you'll get a copy of the ebook, PDF of the book. So you can go through it. And part of it is what you just mentioned here. I talk about we goof up, we do stupid things, we're young, we're dumb. And even when we get older and wiser, we still make mistakes. We're taught by the Bible and by our people, forgive others. Also, we must forgive ourselves for making those bad judgments and move forward instead of holding on to the mistake that put us where we were.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
All right, Rob. Hey, thank you for being here, man. This is awesome, man. So I appreciate you sharing your story and stuff. Tell the people I saw didn't mention it earlier, but I was saving it for you, that Forbes picked you in the under 30 in 2018.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Forbes magazine, the famous Forbes magazine that you hear about in rap songs and whatnot, every year they pick 30 people in specific professions. And so I made the Forbes 30 list back in 2018 for none other than the energy sector. That gift of mine that I discovered 22 years ago in refugee camps, that I've spent the last 22 years trying to give away to bring more light, electricity to other people.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Now, I meant to bring this up earlier, and you just brought it to my awareness again, and I'm glad you did. So you said you went, 5-6 years with no education?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever mom and dad may have gave you something to read or talk to you, try to explain, but no formal education.
Yes.
And then when you came over here and you started school, now your mind has got to be so happy that you're finally going to get to bloom and flourish the way you want and everything like that. How frustrating is it when you see, I'm not pinpointing any ethnicity or any, but how frustrating can it be when you see some of these students that don't take advantage of their education? They're so worried about everything else, and then they're making D's and F's and barely getting a C, and they're, I don't want to say wasted opportunity, but they're not taking advantage of what they could be.
Yeah, so I have 12 nieces and nephews. And I'm going to speak as if I'm talking to one of them, because I try and mentor them. You know, they are born and raised in the U.S. Their parents are fairly well off. You know, my siblings work hard living in suburbia in 5-bedroom, nice neighborhoods. And these kids don't know how far we came from. So I told my nephew, I said, what do you want to do in school? The boy said, oh, I want to do well. I want to be top 10. I said, he's 12 years old. I said, so what are you doing towards it? He said, oh, I go to school. I said, what about when you're not in school? He said, oh, I spent 8 hours playing Lord of Warcraft or some video game. So I told him, I said, okay, that's good. You're playing video games. Now, if you're spending your whole time playing video games, what do you think the outcome is going to be? Do you think that the stereotype is Asian or Indian kids are smarter? Do you think they're playing Lord of Warcraft? Said no. I said that's exactly it. So I said, look, where you spend your time is where you're going to get the results. I remember when I first came here, age 12 years old, I've never owned a television my whole life. And it started from that first experience. My classmates knew about all the cartoon characters, all the celebrities, all the gossip, but had no idea what the homework was. So I knew then and there what not to do. You know, you talk about you want to go to Harvard and Stanford, but you don't even know what the homework is. So that's what I try and tell my nieces and nephews. Look, you want to do well, spend an hour or two, study well, study ahead. And if you, whatever you spend your time is where you'll get your results. If you spend time playing basketball, you'll be good at it. You spend time studying, you'll be good at it. You spend time playing the video games, you'll be good at it. And guess what? This boy is now calling me to brag, talk about he's doing well in school, doing exactly what I told him. So it's frustrating, yes, to see the kids yet sort of misuse it, but everybody grows up wanting to be successful. And I think really what shocks me is the illogic in their actions and intent. If you want to do well and you do nothing, you end up with nothing. You end up, especially for minorities, we blame the system. No, we should have been studying all along. That's what helps you. So they're, you know, you get out what you put in. And that's the message I'd leave for young people. It's something I try to instill in my nieces and nephews and all the young people in my life. And so far, he's happy that he's doing better. But he literally did not realize the connection between playing video games and betting and getting bad grades, which was bizarre to me.
Yes. I don't understand. I'm studying for 10 minutes, but I'm playing for 4 hours.
Exactly.
So yeah. So I was a school teacher for 12, 14 years.
Okay.
And we would meet with parents with, you know, kids that are struggling. And I would tell the parents, they would go, I don't know if they're just not smart. I don't know what to do anymore. And I would tell them, I would go like this, I'm letting you know. And I taught seventh graders, so they're still trying to find their way. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them, I would say, don't get frustrated. They may not want to do book work, book sense, but they'll get through because they want to graduate, okay? But they'll find their way. Reading may not be their thing. My younger brother, we was pulling teeth to get him to do any homework, but you put a wrench in his hand to tell him to go, the car is not started. He'll go figure out what's wrong with that car and fix it automobile. Mm-hmm. Or a plumber or electrician or an AC man. I said, so don't get all excited because they're not doing, because when they figure out what they really want to do, they'll put everything they got into it to get it, to do that.
Absolutely.
And I said, we all expect education. But again, not everybody's going to college.
Yeah. This is true. I think it's part of discovering what that gift is, right? That gift is different things.
Like
you say, for your brother, it's with his hands. For me, it was the ability to work with numbers. For my older brother, storytelling. He's a fantastic storyteller. So we all have different gifts, but discover those gifts and try and focus on how to productively give those gifts away, and you'll mostly fare off very well.
Yeah, that was messages that I would tell them when they finally figure out what they want to do, don't worry, they're going to do great. And when they finally figure, it may not be school like you want, but they'll figure it out. And then I would say, and don't let them fool you with the grades they're making. And don't let them fool you saying they're not smart or you don't think they're not smart. I said, because I guarantee you, when they're old enough to go take that driver's license test to get that driver's license so they can start driving, they'll know that book from front to back, inside out, frontwards, backwards, so they can pass that test. I said, so whatever they want to do, they will do it.
Yeah. I see you have a bobblehead of Michael Jordan in the background. It reminds me of the two most famous people in their profession, right? Albert Einstein, failed high school algebra, I think it was. And Michael Jordan was cut from his high school team. But look what they went on to do. Because to your point, they discovered something they really loved. They worked hard at it, and they did not let any hardships get in their way.
And it goes back. I use the example again that with Thomas Edison and the light bulb. They say, you know, he failed 10,000 times, and he comes back and said, "No, I found 10,000 ways it won't work."
Yeah.
And then he finally found the way it will work. Yeah. So he just kept working at it. All right, Rob, man, thank you for being here. Boy, time has flown here. I appreciate your story. I appreciate your resilience to move forward and keep going. Now, you know as well as I do, there's people struggling today. And if you can leave us with a powerful message to help them get through today, that'd be awesome, buddy.
Absolutely. My powerful message is this, and I'll put a context to it. There's two or three times that I've really been the very best in the world, stood on the stage with Stevie Wonder, wonderful people. And I look back and say, how did I get there? And I got there by doing what I would advise you to do as you go through a difficult time, is to be your true self, not who you think other people want you to be, not what the other people want you to be, but who you truly are. And that is how you truly shine. So I encourage you to look into that and find what that is and stick to it. Thank you.
Can't be nobody else other than you. So
exactly.
Yes, sir. And again, as you're growing and learning, getting through struggles, you'll learn who you really are and what you can do to help your community and society. So, Rob, thank you for being here. Everybody else, thank you for coming in. USA live stream, thank you for coming in. Rose, thank you again for coming in. It's been a long time. Everyone else on the replay, share us out. Let somebody get some inspiration, fire them up and get them through today. Get them through what they're going through. Everyone else, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.